I'll tell you why I'm an optimist. I think that you can discern quite clearly that the majority of people don't like what's going on. I mean, all these polls showing direction of the country and so on, the negative results. The country does not believe that the U.S. is a rotten place. They do not believe that it was set up as a slaveholding operation. They do not believe that it is an evil, racist country. It isn't.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. We have a very special guest for you today. Somebody I didn't think would ever come on this channel, just because he's such a legend. You know him well. I've seen him speak. I've been reading his editorials for years. And one of the smartest people out there that I know, Lord Conrad Black. And it's not every day we get royalty on the show, Lord Conrad, but it's great to have you on. And hey, I know you've got opinions. You know, I saw you speak at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference.
Oh, yeah.
You were like lambasted the Trudeau administration about their environmental policies, about all of these things that they were doing, like killing the resource industry, which made the country of Canada, yes, and also the United States. We've done similar things here. And hey, you've been around a long time. Should we be optimistic that the left has overplayed its hand, or should we just throw in the towel now?
I am decidedly optimistic. But first of all, let me thank you for your extremely gracious introduction. I didn't really recognize myself, but I'm not royal. You know, the royals are members of the royal family. In theory, I'm noble, but that and the correct fare get me on the public transit system all around the world. So, it's good for making a dinner reservation in London or anywhere in England, but that's what it is, really. It's nice being a member of the parliament, though. On your question, I'll tell you why I am an optimist. I think that you can discern quite clearly that the majority of people don't like what's going on. I mean, all these polls showing direction of the country and so on, the negative results. The country does not believe that the U.S. is a rotten place. They do not believe that it was set up as a slaveholding operation. They do not believe that it is an evil, racist country. It isn't. I mean, there are a few evil and racist people in a population of a third of a billion. You couldn't avoid that. But it is not that. It is, as most Americans realize, a great country, and most of the people are good people most of the time. And it's been a strange phenomenon where you had this, I mean, if I may say it, I'm sorry to be so syncopated here, but if I may say this, I think Americans underestimate what the whole country, white and African Americans, have achieved on the civil rights side. This is the only country in the history of the world where a formerly servile, enslaved minority was not only emancipated, that's happened all over, but there's this effort to raise them up to a state of equality. And in effect, it's happened. And it was, and I don't think Americans give themselves enough credit for that. Instead, they're still harking back to the undoubted evils of slavery. But, Mr. Lincoln said that if every drop of blood drawn by the lash had to be repaid by the sword, he was still going to abolish slavery. And he did it. And most, the overwhelming majority of Americans are glad that he did it. And so I think what's happening now is, in the temporary absence of a serious foreign rival, and at a point when previously oppressed people were no longer really oppressed, you got this strange era of people doing a rethink on the U.S. and saying, well, look, wait a minute here. This really isn't such a heroic country. You know, we've done this, we've done that. And that happens. It's like an individual sometimes gets very self-critical. And the country does sometimes too. But it's gone too far. Everyone sees it's gone too far. The United States, it's like all other countries, has made its mistakes and done some bad things. But it is, on balance, one of the most positive forces in the history of the world. And the huge expansion of post-war democracy and the free market system is chiefly due to the United States. And we now know a reduction in the percentage of the world's population, even as that population has gone up, that is in chronic poverty from 70% at the end of World War II down to 10%, only 10%. That's still a lot of people. But this is progress, and the U.S. is the great engine of progress. So I think that what you're going to get is the sensible, reasonable majority, Mr. Nixon's silent majority, are going to say, this is bunk, and we've had enough of it. Yes, we've had our faults, but we're not going to spend the rest of our national life in self-flagellation. Let's turn these ingrates and hypocrites out. And I think that's what we're going to see this year.
Hey, and I'm hoping that you're right about that. Just the population sometimes you think has just been dumbed down to the point where the average guy is working two jobs, just trying not to go bankrupt, and just can't focus on the bigger picture, and feels that the elites have like totally abused him, totally exploited him, and basically, you know, nobody is out looking for your interests. You know, you've just had it. And, you know, it's hard for the average working person to just keep the effort up and really, you know, stay focused. And
sure. On the other hand, he can remember that 3 years ago, things were better. And the president who made them better is running for the office again. So, you know, you can put two and two together.
Yeah, I was definitely was better. I mean, how many wars got started under Biden's predecessor? Was it
about as many as the full points of, under Trump, about as many as the full points of inflation? There were no wars, no inflation, no oil imports, no illegal immigration, and no unemployment.
Yeah.
A million more jobs to be filled than there were unemployed. That's full employment.
Right. And TV news was a lot more entertaining back then, too. Love him or hate him, it was a lot more entertaining.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a great comedic genius in addition to his other talents.
So, look at, you know, the left-wing media was prospering under him as well. You know, all the jobs that have been lost in the left-wing media, the Washington Post, you know, CNN, all those anchors that have been shown the door,
anchors, Chris Wallace, they're all gone.
They're all gone. So they didn't even know that he was instrumental in their prosperity. Where are they now?
That's it.
So looking ahead, you know, one thing, we were under the impression, we were sold the bill of goods, I think, that this was going to be the China century, the Chinese century. And now we see that China is one big tofu dreg tiger, you know? It's like, it's falling apart.
No, they're not in any of these international organizations, really, because you can't believe a word they say or a figure they publish. I mean, there's no doubt, as a development story, as a primitive country bootstrapping itself up to great economic progress, it's a brilliant story. No one can say anything to oppose that view. But the idea that it's a real rival to the United States is rubbish. I mean, none of the institutions have or deserve any respect, except possibly the armed forces, although they haven't really been active since the Korean War. And it's a 40% command economy. They still have 300 million people living the way they did 1,000 years ago. It's, you know, it's a corrupt, authoritarian, totalitarian state. And, you know, it has no great diplomatic suavity. The Burmese colonels found them so offensive, they threw them out and brought back that lady that they'd banished under house arrest for 20 years. Their Belt and Road approach is a fiasco. They're going to lose their pants. I have to agree with the recently convalescent Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, when he said that the Chinese aren't 10 feet tall. No, and they aren't. You know, they're famous, numerous, distinguished nationality, but the China is no real rival of the United States.
Hey, well, you know, you look at all that infrastructure is just crumbling before your very eyes. And then they've exported that in the form of the Belt and Road Initiative, or they call it the Bribe and Rape Initiative.
Yes.
You know, the dam in Ecuador, it's got 1,000 cracks in it because they use that fine Chinese concrete. I'm afraid to go to the Bahamas now because they built those new hotels in Nassau, and who knows how long they're going to last. You know, standards, right?
U.S. And they export the workers. They send Chinese workers to work. So they don't create employment where they go, and they don't create a great deal of gratitude or goodwill.
So, what about what's happening in Europe? I mean, Europe is like in a sorry state right now. And
some parts are worse than others.
Yeah, Eastern's better.
Yeah, and look, I think this premier in Italy is doing very well. The woman, you know, I think she's fine. I think you're starting to get signs of life there. I mean, the problems really are in Britain. I think is going through a cycle of poor government, and they'll come out of it. They always do. You know, it's generally a well-governed country. But right now, it's kind of treading water. It's moving sideways. Germany is in a puzzling state. I mean, it is the strongest country in Europe, but it's still intimidated by the moral atrocities of its past within living memory to elderly people. And so they're kind of reluctant to step out and take the lead in Europe. They want to be in a cocoon of allies and move together with them, which is much better than Germany and its militant domineering mode. But it's a continent that's still, I think, reorienting after the World Wars and Cold War. But there are signs, as you say, in Eastern Europe, there are signs of great hope in the Czech Republic, in Hungary, in Poland, and in some ways in Ukraine also.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Ukraine war here, we can't get a straight story on what exactly is going on there. It's like dueling propagandists, you know, it's like that thing from dueling banjos, you know. You just don't know who to believe or what. What's your take on what's happening there and how it's going to end?
Look, I think that everybody, including the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who should have been court-martialed, by the way, General Milley, thought the Russians were going to take over all of Ukraine in a few weeks. I mean, that's what he told the Senate, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the fight that the Ukrainians have put up is a heroic fight, and I think we all feel that in the West. And if Russia had taken back Ukraine, it would have undone the largest single part of the greatest and most bloodless strategic victory in the history of the world, which the West won in the Cold War, when the USSR just fell like a souffle, disintegrated, without a shot being fired. And that was a tremendous victory for the Western world and for democracy. And as we were just discussing, a number of those countries have done very well as democratic countries. If we had allowed the Russians simply to take over Ukraine, we, including the Ukrainians, it would have undone part of that. It would have shown the world that the Western alliance was a paper tiger, that we were flabby and nobody need worry about anything we said. So I think it was terribly important that we support Ukraine. I think we could have done a better job of it, frankly. We should have, the weapons we're giving them now, we should have given them at the start. But with all that said, we have a second goal there, apart from assuring that Ukraine survives and is recognized and accepted as an independent country. We want still to bring Russia into the West. We don't want to drive them into the arms of the Chinese. So we shouldn't be holding out demanding regime change in the Kremlin or sweeping out of every square inch of Ukraine. I think it's quite clear we can make a deal now if you let the Russians have most of what they've taken. Maybe you can roll them back a bit, but you've got to do it on the ground. If the Ukrainians can't do it, they've got to live with 3/4 of a loaf. Only this time, the guarantees of Ukraine wouldn't be phony guarantees like we all gave them before when they gave up the nuclear weapons that they inherited from the Soviet Union. They got to be real guarantees. The Russians have to understand if they invade Ukraine again, they will have war with NATO, all of NATO.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, at least
that, by which I mean, including Turkey and Spain, Canada, and not just everybody freeloading on the United States.
Yeah. Which was one of the themes of the last president's tenure is that, that NATO has to step up and actually...
And they did. When he said it, they did do it.
Yeah, because they were called to account. So, yeah, interesting things that nobody thinks about. You know, one thing that's interesting, going back to China, is that their attitude has unified all the countries around them and sent them back to the U.S., the Philippines, Vietnam. We just did a major deal with them. Japan, Korea,
Thailand. Thailand was playing footsie with them for a while.
Yeah, and there you go. Now Thailand's got a bunch of Belt and Road projects that are probably going to fall apart in the next 10 years too. And you know, all of this has changed. So the idea of the development that China saw over the last 20-30 years, now the rest of South Asia, Southeast Asia, probably going to be the beneficiaries of that.
Yeah, and I have to say, not that you've raised this, but I'm not a pessimist about Taiwan either. I mean, the fact is, it's about 140 miles of blue water across the Formosa. That's four times as much as the Allies had to cross invading Normandy. And the Chinese would have to move 500,000 men in slow moving boats across that water. It reminds me of a speech of Mr. Churchill's in 1940 when he said, "We're still awaiting the long promised invasion. So are the fish," meaning, you know, try it and they'll all drown. And it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see it either. This is their way of getting attention or distracting or whatever. And so the crumbling of the Chinese economy, it looks like they're going through 1929 over there now.
It could come to that. I mean, it's tenuous from the look of it.
Yeah. So,
and something, look, in 1929, we had the ability in the 30s to spend more money, use these workfare schemes to put people back to work, and, you know, gradually get out of it. But China's already done that. So they've done the work. As you say, they've got highways and bullet trains to nowhere, cities with empty 40-story buildings in them, and there's a forest of these buildings, like downtown New York with nobody in it, you know? So they pulled all those levers. What are they going to do next?
Yeah, they have a version of New York City. I actually saw it from a bullet train, which I would never ride in now, knowing what I know about the quality of their infrastructure. But I saw that city, and it's like, wow. But nobody's there, and they can't get anybody to move there, and they can't even force people to move there. And, you know, just the inequities of their system. You think the CCP can last much longer? How much longer can they last?
I would have to assume that they would. Look, I'm not a person who follows China every day. I think the CCP will last, but I think the masquerade they're putting on as a challenge to leading the whole world will be less durable and less believable than, you know, when and less violent than when Russia, you know, the Soviet Union tried it. Khrushchev, Samuel Berry, and in straight economic terms, not politically. They were always a friendly country, but Japan thought they were going to take over the economic leadership of the world, too. That didn't
very happen. True.
But
very
Japan, true. At least, is for real as an economy.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's still a powerhouse, even though it's been kind of forgotten. So, reason for optimism? You think the world has, looked over the abyss? and not
and didn't want to go there. Yeah. Didn't want to go there.
Yeah. I hope you're right. And hey, I really appreciate
it. I think the problem is that in all of our Western countries, education's gone to pieces. And one of the ironies is all of us spend more and more on education and get less and less well-educated people. And I think the greatest single menace are the teachers' unions. And this Weingarten woman is the J. Edgar Hoover's old public enemy number one list, you know. But there's an antidote to it. People are going to charter schools, homeschooling, separate schools, and so forth.
Well, you can actually do homeschooling more effectively now in the age of the internet than you ever could before, and makes homeschooling a viable possibility for millions of people. And there's just an article I glanced at said that thousands of schools are getting ready to close in the United States because there's no students there. So, you know, that's when private parties sell a product, unless they're a monopoly, if you don't like it, you don't buy it. But when the government's selling it, you don't have a choice, and you got to subsidize it and prop it up when it's failing. So, interesting case of what's happening there. The New York City Teachers Union was always on the total extreme. That's where Rand Garten came out of. Her predecessor, Albert Shanker, was the first teacher's strike. Milton Friedman always said, once teachers' unions became trade unions instead of affinity organizations, that education started going downhill.
They stopped being a professional association and then just became an irresponsible industrial trade union. Albert Shanker, I knew from the Trilateral Commission. He was a charming man to have a dinner or drinks.
So very bright.
But he was a complete cynic. I mean, you play him with a few drinks and he acknowledged what he was doing. He was just taking the country for a ride and the hell with the children.
Goes back for more. Well, Lord Black, I really appreciate your coming on the show here.
It's my pleasure here.
Yeah. It's
Can I just put in one plug for my book here?
And please. I was going to ask you about your book.
I'm just going to hold it up here if I can. Here it is. This is Moses, Socrates, Alexander the Great, and Julius Caesar. It's volume one. This is my big historical work in my career. And I'm two-thirds of the way through volume two now writing it. But the political and strategic history of the world. Now, it sounds like a pompous and absurd title, and it is a big book. But you can actually, this gets us up to the Emperor Augustus. You can actually put it out there. You read it, take 10 years reading it. It'd be a long read with from back to front or any way you want. But it's all there. And you can see how we got to where we are now. And it's my rebellion against this theory that to understand a really significant amount of history, you have to read 20 or 30 volumes, like some of these ones behind me in the shelf here. It's not true.
Hey, well, that's the purpose of the original purpose of a liberal arts education was to read all those important books, key books, become
a
free thinker, critical thinker. But somehow we went off the rails in this country in any event, and now we have a
we're all experts in gender studies and
useful things,
which nobody can make a living in.
Yeah, of course not. We'll have a link to the book in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Lord Black, thank you again so much for coming on. Been a real pleasure. Highlight of my 12 years of doing this.
Yeah. Look, the pleasure's mine. I hope you'll invite me on again.
Thanks for listening to Cary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.